Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass. In on goal, McDavid scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field. Going back, Marquise Grissom. He's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game.
Here's a shot. They score!
The 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ball game in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
Watch out. And now here's your host, Elliott Price.
She is reeling in the medals at a ridiculously young age. Tonight, she'll swim for gold. Certainly, she'll come away with something. Penny Oleksiak is Canada's Olympic bright light. Tonight could be medal 4. Should she stay healthy, continue to grow, and stay engaged, she could well dominate the world 4 years from now. Heck, she's not that far off right now. But her greatness should not be measured in her medal total. And that goes for Michael Phelps as well. Were they long jumpers or pole vaulters or even soccer players, there would just be one medal in the offing every 4 years. The luck of the draw in running the count up is your sport of choice. Be a swimmer in summer, be a speed skater in winter. Imagine if jumpers could win one each for, back jump, free jump, breast jump, and butterfly jump, not to mention the team events combining all 4. Let's not get caught up in the numbers comparison that spells greatness. Just enjoy the sheer prowess in an athlete so young who's blossoming into greatness. I think every show should have a tragically hip song.
Yeah, I think so.
This summer, anyways.
Summer of hip.
Yeah. So there you go. Just when you think you have no ideas left, you find the butterfly jump or something.
What did we just calculate? How many years do you have to be as an Olympian for a pole vaulter to get
8 chances at a medal?
8 chances.
Whereas Michael Phelps could have 8 chances in one Olympics. It's not fair. So say, the guy's got, what does he have now, 22 gold medals? Which is unbelievable, there's no doubt. But he gets one try after another. If it doesn't work, he gets another one. Not that he's not great. I'm not saying that. Anyway, Penny Oleksiak in the pool at 10. I love this. This is the way the world should be run, my friends. She will be in the pool, and the race will start at 10:18. Not 10:17, not 10:19. 10:18. We went to the comedy. I told you we went to the
mega
gala,
stars.
The mega stars of comedy, and obviously it's not the same as a batting order. It's not the same as a relay race because they went with the big gun off the top. Lewis Black led off, and people came in and they didn't see him because they didn't know that it starts when it's supposed to start. By the way, and such great love for Penny Oleksiak, Kiera Smith with an opportunity to win a medal at 9:17. That's the 200-meter breaststroke. So there you go. That's what's up tonight. Major disappointment. I mean, I heard a sportscast somewhere in the city today. I'm not saying where. They said that our Canadian doubles team of Pospisil and Nestor lost in straight sets. I'm going, that's it? That's what you're telling me?
Yeah.
That's not good enough. That's not good enough. I mean, they lost in two tiebreakers. They lost heartbreakingly, 7-6. They were facing match point and turned it around and were looking at set point on their side and then ended up losing in that same game, and they went down 7-6, 7-6. That was heartbreaking.
But it sets up a really interesting bronze medal match against the Americans, Pospisil, Sock.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we're taking that one.
Sock and Johnson against our boys. So an opportunity for a bronze medal there. What's on tonight's show? Well, last minute, we had to get somebody to talk about Patrick Waugh, who says, thank you very much. And I pictured, you know, Patrick going up to Joe Sakic's office, and there was nobody there today because Sakic was on vacation. And, of course, Patrick would have walked in and gone, I'm not coaching this team anymore. And then, you know, walking off.
Sounds like a Seinfeld episode. You quit when your boss isn't there.
That's what he does. No, when he was with the Canadians, he went to the coach's box, and he said, that's it. Oh. Sportsnet Scott Lewis will join us just after 8:30, and we'll talk Patrick Waugh. We'll get our NFL countdown down to team number 20. It's starting to get interesting. Took care of Washington last night. So the Browns, the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, the Bears, the Dolphins, and Washington so far in our NFL countdown. Our NFL insider, Daniel Kalis, before 9 o'clock tonight. The interview, I promise, tonight, Ghislaine Landry from Canada's Rugby Sevens. And I was watching... who was it? Fiji just crushed the Brits. Last it was like 36-7 or something like that. We were having dinner at Ye Olde Orchard and watching. They were, you know, when they sang that anthem at the beginning, I knew they were going to win the game. They were. I'm telling you.
Apparently, that's their first medal ever.
Right. Unbelievable. All right. Sportsnet Central panel. If you missed it, it's 6:30. Major conversation. We talked about this. The women at the Olympics, but the dissing of Jeannie Bouchard by the CBC guy who had won a medal for Canada as an Olympian previously. And we'll talk about that. And also Prince Fielder announcing his retirement. And just very sad. The whole thing very sad. The unbelievable thing. Again, I don't know how this works when it comes to Major League Baseball, and I'll ask you and you'll get the answer, because everyone I asked today got the answer. Cecil Fielder finished his career with 319 home runs. 319 home runs. How many home runs did his dad hit?
Cecil Fielder?
Yes.
Well, Cecil Fielder had 319, as same as Prince Fielder.
I say Cecil?
You said Cecil, yeah. That's why. Okay. They both had the same. I thought it was a trick question. That's why it took me a second. I was like, Elliot plays games. He can play a game.
It's like Jeopardy. dumb questions. Yeah. All right. Yeah, Cecil and Prince ended up with the same amount
amazing.
Of home runs.
That's amazing. Ridiculous.
Yeah. He had to have like back fusion for that to happen. But they both had 319 home runs. And we'll hear a great interview with Canada's best ever sprinter. Donovan Bailey talking about Andre DeGrasse as at least one man stepping up to all these Canadian women that are trampling the men in this country. All right, we'll see what Freddie has up his sleeve in today's version of Opening Faceoff. That's next on Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price, CFMB 1280 in Montreal.
Tackling the latest headlines and the hottest topics. It's time for the Opening Faceoff with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
By the way, Freddie Eunice is sitting in for Grant today. And I must say, before we continue with the Opening Faceoff, that I couldn't wear my hat today. They wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let me wear the hat. There's a policy. I guess they have their own sponsors, and so I didn't get to wear. I tweeted it out.
Yep.
My picture in my Miss You Drain hat, but they wouldn't let me wear the Miss You Drain hat on my breakfast television hit earlier today. Very nice of them to have me on and help me spread the love of our show to the rest of the world, because we know that City TV bombs out there to all corners, north, south, east, west, anywhere on the globe. No hat today, but that doesn't mean that Miss You Drain is not the best place that you could ever go for your plumbing, draining, and unblocking, because they are 25 years of top-notch service. 514-640-0070. MissYouDrain.com. But it's time for the opening face-off, so let's go for Dye. What do you got?
Well, before we start, I got to say, you look good on that picture on Twitter. It looked good. The hat looks good on you. It's a good-looking hat. Okay, let's start with this.
Good.
Something fun. Yesterday... There we go. That was it. That's the end of that one. Yesterday during the show...
Buddy.
In the background, we had the Chinese athletes playing table tennis.
Yes.
And you noticed the weird sort of interesting behaviors they had before their serve.
Don't tell. My son is here, and he's gonna start watching it, and he's going to use it on me.
Okay, so I'm not going to say what it is. Anyways, my question to you is this. What have been some of the more interesting, say, routines or behaviors or superstitions that you've seen athletes do? So, for instance, I'll start it off to give you a chance to think, because I've thought about some. Nadal with the picking.
Oh, there. Okay. Yeah.
Right? That's, and with the hair, I don't know what kind of underwear he's wearing. I don't want it. Another example, as you saw, or has been reported, Canadian swimmer Santo Condorelli flips his dad the bird before he swims.
Nice.
That's they have their own little thing. Okay. So what kind of interesting routines have you seen athletes do in any sport that you've covered, that you've seen, that you've watched?
Well, since I'm a baseball guy... It's about guys and going to the plate and the machinations they go through. The original was Mike Hargrove. I don't know how many people remember him. He did so many things and took so long that they nicknamed him the human rain delay. Swear. Mike Hargrove was known as the human rain delay, went through such. Nomar Garciaparra, he wanted to go onto the field and smack him. He would un-Velcro and re-Velcro his gloves every single pitch. And, of course, Big Poppy spits into his hands. How disgusting is that? Every time, and then he smacks. It's disgusting.
It's a good thing they don't share bats then, do they? With players.
Yeah. Oh. You don't want to give the guy a high five after a home run either, do you?
No.
Hey, worse. Okay, now we didn't see this. Okay, but we know it is true.
As long as we didn't see it.
Okay. You know, David, you know Moises Alou? No, do you know what his... he used to pee on his hands in the shower. I swear! And he didn't wear batting gloves, I don't think. I don't think Moises wore batting gloves.
Well, that makes sense.
I'm just saying.
That's gross.
He thought that made his hands stronger. I don't know. Made him a better hitter. I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, those are some interesting things you've noticed and are heard
of. I didn't notice. Okay. I wasn't there. Somehow, Moises told somebody.
Well, who's telling someone that?
I don't know.
Okay. Now, here, on to the next here. You mentioned Penny Oleksiak in your opening comment. She's been absolutely phenomenal. Her performance has been inspiring. I don't want to say the greatest. I agree with what you said earlier. What kind of performances have you seen that have been awe-inspiring, captivating, sort of either captivated you, a nation, inspirational in any way, be it Olympics or otherwise? Or maybe one of each, something in the Olympics that's sort of been awe-inspiring, inspirational, and something that you've seen in, say, professional sports.
You know what? Growing up, we had very dry spell, as I mentioned, through the 1970s, the entire 1970s, winter and summer Olympics combined, Canada had one gold medal. One. Kathy Kreiner, only gold medal. But in 1968, the lady of the Mars Bars commercials, Nancy Green, won two gold medals for Canada in skiing. And, you know, I was 11 years old, and that's the first Olympics that I remember, and that was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. As I recall, it was the Olympics of Nancy Green and Jean-Claude Keeley. Paul Henderson scoring that goal for Canada in 1972. I was 15 years old, mm-hmm. and the country shut down. We didn't have school. Anyone that went to school... watched the hockey game at school.
That was school that day.
That was school that day. It was a weekday, game 8 between Canada and the Russians in the Summit Series. And for the third game in a row, Paul Henderson scored the winning goal.
Amazing.
That was amazing.
All happened before my time, by the way.
Yeah. Everything happened before your time.
Okay, here, we're going to talk about it later, but I have to bring it up. Patrick Waugh resigned today, steps down as coach, as vice president of hockey operations. My question to you, is it going to be, are we going from the summer of Subban to the summer of St. Patrick? What are the chances?
Well, what do you mean by that?
My question is, I think...
What are you saying? Come on, spell it out.
I got a feeling that there's going to be a lot of rumors going about him coming here to Montreal.
Well,
I guess that's what I think.
Tomorrow, so it really doesn't matter.
Right, so my question to you is this. What do you think the chances of him coming here at all? What do you think it will take for him to come here, at all?
First of all, I'll talk to Sportsnet Scott Lewis about it coming up just after 8:30. Because of the job that he accepted in Denver and the reason for his unhappiness in leaving, he's not coming here to be the coach.
Okay.
Just the coach. That wasn't good enough in Denver. It's not going to be good enough in Montreal. I think if he doesn't get both their jobs, he's not coming.
Okay.
He's not happy about, what was the line? I heard it today. If you don't ask me to be the coach, if you're not going to let me, don't ask me to be the chef, if you're not going to allow me to shop for the groceries.
Is that what he said?
No, that's what I'm saying. Somebody else said that. It wasn't him, but that's in essence what he's saying. He wants to have the word on the players, and that was his understanding that that's what he had in Denver. And so I'm thinking there's a possibility that they knew that this was coming eventually, that he was forced out because that's what he signed on to do. And they must have had problems this summer with who he wanted and who the management team decided to bring in. And they knew full well that Patrick signed on to be both coach and player procurement guy, and they didn't allow him to do that, and he's that kind of guy. He would walk away.
Do you remember, was he there before Joe Sakic signed on? He was, okay. Ah, interesting.
I think so.
I seem to think so, too, but I can't quite remember. Okay.
Maybe not, but it doesn't matter, because that's the job, that's the reason he went there. He went there because he was going to be coach and also the person who decided on which players, and I don't think he's allowed to do that. Right now, you could tell in his statement, that's not the case.
Okay, and finally, we'll leave on this. We're in Montreal, we're the Habs. With all the changes...
Excuse me?
We are the Habs.
Who are we?
The city of Montreal,
you speak of?
The city of Montreal, the people of Montreal, excluding most people in this room.
All right. Speak up.
I guess my question is this.
Yes.
Given all of the changes they've made on the ice in front of Carey Price, what kind of team are they this year? What do you think they are relative to what they were? How are they better?
Relative to which team? The team that started the year 9-0 or the team that didn't make the playoffs?
I'm trying to take Carey Price out of the equation.
You can't take Carey Price out of the equation.
Enough.
Because they'll be a crappy team no matter which team they are.
Okay, so
if Carey Price is your goaltender, I don't care which team you are in the NHL, if you take him out of the equation, you're going to have trouble making the playoffs.
So what kind of team do you think they are then right now?
The Canadiens are a playoff team.
They're a playoff
team? With Carey Price, they're a playoff team with an opportunity, depending on the advancement of their young players, to do better. And we'll see. Nathan Beaulieu has to step up. We have to see the continued advancement of Alex Galchenyuk. Some of the young players that are coming in could be better. Radulov needs to be the scorer they think they're getting, and the Canadiens could be a good team. I think they're a better team than they were last year.
Ah, that was my next question. Okay.
But they weren't a Stanley Cup team last year, even with Carey Price. But you never know. They have talent. They're not going to be a bad team.
They'll
won't miss the playoffs. They stay healthy. They'll be a playoff team.
And they will be grittier.
All right. Is that it?
That's it.
The opening faceoff with Elliott Price and Grant Robinson.
We need to get you a Grant's not here today. Freddie Ayuni is sitting in today to do the opening face-off. So it's all right. You okay? You all right?
I loved it. Yeah. I'm having a great time. Was it okay for you? More importantly, was it okay for you?
Yeah, it was great. And Eli was very excited. Also, he said, I love doing the face-off.
The face-off's great. Yeah. Being here with you, Elliot, it's the best part of my day.
The face-off is Grant Robinson's idea. Okay, we're looking for something that we could kick around at the beginning of the show, and it's Grant's idea. And Grant will be back on Monday, so one more of these for Freddie. That'll be tomorrow night.
Elliot.
You want a piece of me?
Price.
Well, you just mind your P's and Q's, Buster.
Let's rumble!
And remember who you're dealing with.
He's no David Suzuki,
but he knows stuff.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price, right here on 1280 AM Montreal.
Say goodnight to the bad guy.
It's go time.
Yes. You're gonna eat lightning, and you're gonna crap thunder.
All right. Time for voices. The Montreal Impact back at it on the weekend. Very difficult spot. It has been and hopefully will not continue to be. They're going to New York. This is the road game in between the three home games. They got one out of the way and they got two coming up. They already put 3 points in the bank after beating Houston 1-0. And it was on a goal by Mancosu. So what happens now? Drogba's back, Mancosu, and they've been working, as we heard yesterday, with lineups that include both of them in there at the same time. So the Impact, perhaps, with two strikers at once. Here's the coach, Mauro Biello.
Well, I think you got to always work on different things. You can't just put out a lineup and say, okay, he's going to play with him and then see what happens. I think, you know, we had one side doing the 4-2-3-1 and the other side with a 4-4-2. So in the end, if it's not at the beginning of a game, it could be at the end of a game where you got to play with two forwards. So it's important that you find that cohesion and you work on certain things so that when they're in the game, they've seen it already and they've seen certain situations and they'll be ready prepared for them. They complement each other in terms of one being able to hold up the ball and being that target, and one guy now being able to get in behind with his movement. And you want to, when you do that, there's a doubt. There's always that doubt with the defenders, because one's going to come, one's going to go, and you want to create that. And if you're able to do that, you could find that those openings that you're looking for.
There you go. Mauro Biello. And of course, we'll have Giovanni on tomorrow night to preview the Impact game on the weekend. And also, we have a little Evan Bush that we haven't heard, so we'll hear that tomorrow night as well. Meanwhile, it's the last go-round for A-Rod at Fenway Park in Boston. Tonight, he's playing. He's in the lineup. Last night, they called for him all night long, and he eventually stepped to the plate as a pinch hitter. Here's a mix of the different broadcasts from last night.
Now, once again, as they did last night, crowd chanting, "We want A-Rod."
But Alex was saying last night, he said, the Boston fans have always been great. He loves the booing. He loves the screaming.
Certainly answered the question. They were waiting for him so they could boo him. And he said that before the game on Tuesday. He said, "Well, I'm sure they'll boo me back to Miami." And there's a shot of the famous fight between Varitek and A-Rod.
And then for the Yankees, pinch hitting number 13, Alex Rodriguez.
Now you do have to admit that when he's around, it's an event. Look at this place, John. I mean, everybody's got a camera. Everybody's standing.
You don't have to tell me. Believe me, I understand. And the Red Sox lead is 4-2.
A scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most. How much does he want to hit a home run here? Maybe 16? The 2-1. High fly ball, right field. Betts is there. He'll make the catch. Tagging is Sanchez. He'll move to third. So A-Rod flies out to right field for the first out of the inning. And he gets serenaded as he heads back to the Yankee dugout.
They're booing, but they're cheering. They're clapping as he goes back to the... This is a funny place.
Susan Waldman there from the Yankees broadcast, and everybody else that comes with it from Yankee Radio and Yankee Television. And A-Rod getting an opportunity to play the whole game tonight, at least as a designated hitter. We'll see how that works out. Meanwhile, no more Prince Fielder. Retired yesterday, and very, very difficult to watch a press conference. Not only is he saying goodbye to baseball, but he's up there in a neck brace because he has some significant injury and surgeries still to go through.
I'm just, called this today. God damn. Doctors told me since, two spinal fusions, can't play Major League Baseball anymore.
So there you go. A whole lot more with Prince Fielder later in the show and commentary from his teammates. Meanwhile, we're not that far away from, I don't know, Canadian greatness. Yeah, I know. Penny's in the pool tonight. But Andre DeGrasse, and we heard from him a couple of weeks ago about his timing, about little by little, about peaking at the right time. And here's what he said 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's what I've been working on. I know people are probably wondering how come he's not producing these fast times right now early in the season, but it's because I got to save it for the big show. So Right now, I'm just happy that I'm, you know, performing well and, you know, I'm winning races. Not at my best. So, you know, when it's time to run that, I'm going to be ready.
So there you go, Andre DeGrasse. Just to lead in to the Donovan Bailey interview that's coming up later in the show, heard earlier today on Sportsnet 590 in Toronto. It was great hearing Donovan Bailey. He is a huge fan of Andre DeGrasse, and he hopes for nothing but greatness from the next up. Only two Canadians have ever won the 100 meters, as Donovan Bailey will tell you. He won it, and some guy like 90 years ago. So that's it. And, of course, you know, the guy who won it and then, you know, tested positive. We won't talk about that. All right, I got an update coming up, and then we'll talk about Patrick Waugh. He says goodbye to the Colorado Avalanche and hello to the rest of the hockey world because he is now unemployed. That's coming up.
Price. C'est moi. I'm the guy.
There is not any man like him anywhere in the world.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet tonight.
Ding, ding, ding.
With Elliot Price.
Elliot Price.
1280 AM, Montreal.
Oh, it's a deep burn.
Sportsnet tonight.
Oh,
Elliot Price.
Elliot.
It's on me.
Elliot.
I'm the guy. I.
We welcome to Sportsnet tonight with Elliot Price here in Montreal. Sportsnet, Scott Lewis. How are you?
Surprised.
Yes, a very interesting day. Though if I would, you know what, if I laid out all of the verbiage and didn't tell you what team, you might be able to pick the coach and the administrator that did this.
Yeah, I'd say my guess would be pretty accurate. Just like you said, judging by the verbiage and the way things unfolded in the press release.
Anybody that missed it, Patrick Waugh steps down today from his job in Colorado. And so he's walking away from the organization, right? He's done with them.
He has severed all ties, it appears, stepping down as coach and a VP of operations there, and in his own way, on his own terms, apparently.
Yeah, this is something very different. I'm surprised he didn't walk into his boss's office and say, "It's my last day. I'm never coaching here again."
I mean, we've seen that before. I mean, this is, I guess, what we've, effectively come to expect from Patrick Waugh is it's things end abruptly, even from his departure in 95 from Montreal. It was quickly over, as I think everyone remembers. And even as a player, in 2003, by his own lofty standards, a successful season in net with the Avalanche, and less than a month after being bounced from the playoffs, he called it a career at the age of 37.
All right. I think that this sentence, right, I've thought long and hard over the course of the summer about how I might improve this team to give it the depth it needs and bring it to a higher level. To achieve this, the vision of the coach and vice president of hockey operations needs to be perfectly aligned with that of the organization. I must also have to say, in the decisions that impact the team's performance, these conditions are not currently met. So he's not in charge. He's not happy. He doesn't have the players he wants. He's out of there. Am I missing something?
I think the only thing he left out was actually naming Joe Sakic. But, I mean, when he climbed on board there, he was given, if not final say, a major say in hockey decisions. And it appears that maybe that's been pulled back a little bit. I mean, the team, where you see them right now, they haven't had a very busy offseason, but they have added a couple pieces. But they're still very much up against the salary cap. You know, we heard the rumors, was Tyson Barrie going to be in the picture, and they brought him back. I mean, Matt Duchene's been involved. His name's been in trade rumors for, you know, well over a year now. So you got to maybe connect the dots here a little bit that things aren't happening as Patrick Waugh had wanted them to. And Patrick Waugh does what Patrick Waugh wants, and that's why it's over.
With Scott Lewis from Sportsnet, upon the news that Patrick Waugh has walked away from the Colorado organization. And I know we're looking at it as Patrick Waugh doesn't get what Patrick Waugh wants, he walks away. Is it possible that this is coming from the other side, knowing full well if Patrick Waugh doesn't get what he wants, he walks away, that the Colorado Avalanche, perhaps not happy with his coaching, I don't know, made it so he was uncomfortable and might want to walk away?
Certainly a possibility. I mean, just the bizarre way that it's unfolded with, you know, the team has, you know, they didn't comment right away, and Patrick Waugh going through a PR service to announce this. Is it a case of maybe getting out in front of what's coming? Possibly. I mean, if you just look at the results, you've got three seasons of, you know, other than the Jack Adams year in 2013-14, mediocre to poor results. Not much playoff success. So was the writing on the wall? You can dig deep into some of the numbers beyond the win-loss record, and it indicates that, you know, the Colorado Avalanche are often outplayed under Patrick Waugh. You've got the butting heads with guys like Duchesne, whatever happened behind the scenes with Barry this season. So it's quite possible that, yeah, there was maybe something coming from the team, and this is Patrick Waugh's way of maybe saving some face. I don't know. It's tough to speculate on it, but, I mean, it's like I said, it's just bizarre the way it's unfolded.
August 11th seems like a curious date for this kind of thing, and it's almost like Patrick, you know, has had a spy on the office. He was Sakic was out of town and decided, yeah, that's a good time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the, you know, the hockey news cycle goes, this is about as bad as it gets. So, I mean, to call it a surprise would be an understatement. But, no one, I mean, you can even judge by the way it was reported, the way it came out. No one really saw this coming.
With Scott Lewis from Sportsnet talking about Patrick Waugh walking away from Colorado. And for all but one National Hockey League team, that's it. That's the story. Patrick Waugh walks away. Not here in Montreal, my friend. He now becomes part of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, this conversation, I don't think anyone's going to waste any time getting into it. I mean, the one thing I will say is I would wager that Mr. Molson and Mark Bergevin have made their bold transaction of the summer already. So I think if we're going to keep an eye on it, it's, you know, how does the season start? And how does Patrick Waugh figure into Michelle Therrien conversation moving forward?
I tell you what, considering that Patrick Waugh walked away from the Colorado organization because he wasn't just the coach and he didn't get his way as far as players were concerned, that there's no way he'd come to Montreal unless he had Bergevin's job as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Is he wanted to have the final say, so unless there's some clear understanding, if he does go to a new city, I mean, I guess we're only talking about Montreal right now, is there some kind of agreement that, you know, you're the coach and that's it? Or does Patrick Waugh decide that maybe coaching at the NHL level isn't for him and maybe steps back and takes a front office role? Either way, I think that there's going to be a lot to talk about when the puck drops in October in Montreal.
I'm telling you, there's never a dull moment here. It's always something. You think just as Shea Weber finally arrives in town and quells the, oh, he hasn't been here, where has he been? PK's already been in Nashville. And so he was at Coach's Golf Tournament earlier in the week. So now we're finally on the downslope of no. Now Patrick Waugh, by the way, the latest poll numbers that I saw, because it doesn't take long, 59% to 41% in favor of Waugh over Terry as coach. This is Montreal. They're all crazy. You know that.
I think my favorite storyline to follow when the season starts is going to be what happens in Montreal. I mean, I can't imagine what even a 1-5-1 start's going to mean for these conversations.
Because we don't have 24/7 sports stations here. We have 24/7 Habs. That's crazy. Hey, Scott, thank you so much for joining us on a very busy day. This is just beginning. Are we in the middle? I'm not sure.
I think it's just beginning.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's just crazy. Because we're done with the summer of Subban, right? And now we're right into the Patrick Waugh nonsense. So this ought to keep people going until the next. Because I'm telling you, in Montreal, when it comes to the Canadians, there's always something. There is always something. So good on Patrick for walking out on the Colorado Avalanche today. That's fantastic stuff. All right. We're continuing our countdown. You can have either one. In the National Football League with our insider, Daniel Kalis. And I'm excited. We're starting to get serious here. We're done with the garbage, right? We are well into the mediocrity and moving our way towards good. Moving our way towards good. Team number 20 out of 32 coming up. Next.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
And Grant Robinson will be back on Monday, vacationing in the much cooler Florida area and having a grand old time. We haven't heard from him.
We don't know.
We figure he's all right. We sent him an email. We sent him a text.
Did he get back to you?
No.
Nothing.
I haven't heard from Grant.
Are you hurt?
Not really. No, I'm concerned.
Okay.
I'm concerned, but that's okay.
I'll admit, I saw a Facebook photo of him.
Oh.
He went and putt-putt. He did a little putt-putt.
That's good for him. I'm watching the ball game, right? And the catcher just came out to the mound to talk to the pitcher. And the pitcher, as usual, as has been the case for, I don't know, what is it, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years now, put his glove up on his mouth so no one could read his lips. And this is de rigueur, right? I mean, I want to know who's the first guy to do that. Because when I was first to bat, nobody did this. And hockey coaches do that too now. I mean, they have their game plan and paper in their hands, and they put it up at their face when they talk to the assistant coach. And then football guys do it too. It's a whole, I don't know, started with baseball players and their gloves, pitchers on the mound, so that no one could see they were talking to their catcher. And then the catcher started doing it.
So are you saying when's the first time you noticed them doing that?
10 years max.
Only
10
years?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Wow.
All right. Time to continue our National Football League countdown. Daniel Kalis, how are you?
I am doing great. And you guys?
We're doing all right. Do you put your glove up at your face so no one can see what you're saying?
All the time.
All right. As long as we can hear what you're saying, this is the good news. All right, let's see. Where do we stand? We've done the Browns and the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, the Bears, the Dolphins. Washington last night. We are at team number 20, and they are?
The Philadelphia Eagles.
The team that Chip Kelly died with and left it behind. If Chip Kelly had never been with the Philadelphia Eagles, where would they be on your list now, you figure?
It's so hard to answer that because he changed up that entire roster. I mean, if you remember the first year, they had guys like Deshaun and Shady McCoy and Jeremy Maclin, Michael Vick. I mean, that roster has been completely overhauled, so it's very hard to tell where they are. And basically what they did, it seemed, this offseason is they try to rehaul it again by dumping a whole slew of players like Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell and a bunch of other guys that he had either signed or traded for on his team, and they're trying to get the roster to something more that they liked, because they didn't feel that they thought that was one of the reasons they wanted to get rid of him, was they felt that he, had no idea how to put a roster together.
All right, same old quarterback, though. What's going to be with this guy?
I'll be honest and say that I was always a Bradford fan. Okay. I like him. He hasn't proven much. He had a very good end of the season last year. They have a good O-line. We're not sure if Lane Johnson's going to play, but their O-line should have been a strength of their team. It's going to be a bit of a question, a little bit, testing their depth. The problem with Bradford is, A, he can't stay healthy, but B, I don't know that they have a number. They definitely don't have a number one receiver, but they're arguably, do they have a number two or a number three? That's a weak position for them. Their running game is very questionable. They do have a great tight end in Zach Ertz. Brent Celek is a great veteran, number two tight end. So their tight ends are great. The best players they've got are on their defense. Fletcher Cox is one of the best DNs in the league. Hicks, the linebacker, was playing out of his mind last year before he got injured. They're very strong at safety. But then they have huge question marks at corner. So they have positions where they're strong, but they're just, they're weak in other positions. They drafted the young quarterback, so they're, sort of grooming him, but not. They're another one of those teams that's sort of in limbo. We're not sure really where they're going.
All right, so what do they have in a head coach in Doug Peterson? Does anybody know this?
I don't think anyone knows. It's a really wait and see, but I guess if you want to try to get a glimpse of what kind of coaching you're going to see, I would say look at Andy Reid. He played under Andy Reid, then he coached under Andy Reid, so I would expect something similar to the style that Andy Reid has. Hopefully for Eagles fans, Peterson is much better at clock management than Andy Reid is, but Andy Reid won them a lot of games, made them, you know, take them to the playoffs many times, to a Super Bowl, so that's not going to happen this year, but I think that they're hoping that Peterson can give them something like what Andy Reid was able to bring to them.
What did this team draft to help them get better?
That's the thing. They drafted. They traded a whole bunch of picks to move up to get Carson Wentz to be their quarterback of the future. He's not going to play this year. Most likely, he's not even going to dress on most weeks because they have Bradford, and they also paid decent money to Chase Daniel to be their backup. So I don't see them. That's basically their big draft guy that they're banking on. He's not going to be ready to do much for at least another year or two. So it's a sort of wait and see. They're just trying to tread water for now while they get him ready to go and hope all. You know, the other young guys improve and get reps, and by the time Wentz is ready to go, hopefully all the other young guys on the team are, you know, in their prime and ready to pick up, and take them to the playoffs.
We're continuing our National Football League countdown with Dan Kalis. He's here every night as we count down to opening night. We're down to team number 20, and our number one pick will come the night before the opener. So September 7th, we will have our number one team in the National Football League here on Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. Now, I wonder, what kind of a, headstrong quarterback they have when you are the guy and then they go out and draft a quarterback, and you're going, hey, what about me?
Yeah, it's a weird situation. It's also, you got to wonder how that plays in the locker room. But hopefully over time, there's been enough time since all that hoopla went out that he can, mend fences, get everything going in the locker room. And I mean, the truth is it's a benefit to him. Yes, he has a contract for next year, but it's a benefit to him to go out, play well, and have a good season. And if the O-line stays healthy, he at least should be protected. Hopefully the young receivers, can pick up their game and take a step forward. And he can have a good season. I mean, they play in a weak division. They have a weak schedule because they had a terrible year last year. So there is possibilities to have a better season, but there's a lot of question marks around.
All right, so what is the best? Because you said around this spot, anywhere from 6 to maybe 9 wins. How do you see the Eagles winning 9 games?
Yeah, for that to happen, basically, they're going to have to take advantage of their weak division and beat up on those teams if those teams end up being weaker than actually stronger. And Bradford's going to have to be healthy and playing well all season because I think that their defense can have, good spots. Like I said, their D-line is fantastic. It's probably going to end up being one of the best in the league. The linebackers are okay. The DBs have to play well. And if they play well and Bradford stays healthy, they can win a whole bunch of games, it's a lot of ifs. But that's, like I said, I think because of their division, they're not going to lose too many games, but I just don't think they're going to be good enough to make the playoffs.
And clearly for Bradford to stay healthy, they got to protect him. And this is not good news. Earlier tonight in the preseason opener, offensive guard Brandon Brooks, who signed a 5-year deal with the team in the offseason, left with a right biceps injury and not expected to return. He's already had a hamstring injury in this camp. So that's not good.
No, that's not good at all. I actually didn't know that, so thanks for letting me know about that. We discussed the other night when you asked me about Lane Johnson. I mentioned that they had signed someone named Stefan Wisniewski who had played on Jacksonville and the Raiders before that. He had normally been a center, but he also plays guard, and they were raving about him in practice leading up to this preseason game. So in that sense, it looks like maybe they could plug him in, they signed Brooks to a big deal. They obviously were hoping he would play, but at least they have Wisniewski there. But with Lane Johnson, the suspension out also, we're really, pushing it with their depth. I mean, how many teams can go, lose two starters right away like that? I mean, a team's always going to have some injuries, so if you lose two before the season's even started, that's not good.
All right, just checking around the National Football League, and as far as, and again, as I've said many, many times, there's only 3 words that matter when it comes to training camp in any sports, and that is don't get hurt. The Buffalo Bills' second-round pick, Reggie Ragland, has torn his ACL. So that's not good. The Bills were thought to have had a great draft, and this guy was going to step in at inside linebacker, and that's not going to happen now. Don't get hurt, man. Just don't get hurt.
That's basically all it is. People always like to talk about, oh, this guy made a good play, or, oh, someone put up, you know, big stats. And to me, that doesn't matter. Like you said, I just want to know for whether it's your favorite team that you follow, whether it's your fantasy team, it's the only thing you want in preseason is health. The healthiest teams, because at the end of the year, at the NFL season, the healthiest teams are usually the ones that end up winning.
All right. So for the NFC East, two nights in a row, Washington and Philadelphia. That means the Giants are a top 19 team, and they're still alive. And, of course, the Dallas Cowboys. All right.
They'll be coming up soon enough. Don't worry about that.
All right, Daniel. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a good night, everyone.
All right. Let's see. Where do we stand? This was team number 20, as we have dealt with. Here we go. The Browns, the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, the Bears, the Dolphins, Washington, and now the Philadelphia Eagles. Teams gone, and the Raiders and the Cowboys from the regular hosts of this show, not yet. And the Jaguars, son of the host, not yet. And let's face it, for the Raiders and the Jaguars, not to have been mentioned in how many teams is that? Is that 12 now? Right?
I think there's 32
before
teams.
Number 20, we must be done with 12. No, we're done with 13.
There's 32.
There should
teams?
Be 19 left, right?
Yes.
And 19 and 13 are 32. So there are 13 teams gone, and consider how many times in the last decade, one or the other or both, Raiders and the Jaguars have drafted in the top five. So pretty amazing, and we'll see how far we can get before one of our teams gets mentioned. All right, coming up, finally, we get to talk to Ghislaine Landry, one of Canada's rugby sevens that won a bronze medal in a frenetic sport. You get an opportunity to watch it with the men again today. It is wild, and it is busy because they lost their semifinal, and then that same day they had to suck it up and play the bronze medal game and ended up winning it against Britain. We'll get you an update, and then we'll talk to Ghislaine. Coming up, you're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price on CFMB 1280 in Montreal.
Elliot Price.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
We have with us, and we are very excited to, a bronze medalist for Canada at the Olympics in the rugby sevens. It's Ghislaine Landry. Hello, Ghislaine. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Are you resting a sore body? I mean, that is a tough sport, I got to tell you.
Yeah, a little beat up and still definitely tired from the tournament and just the aftermath of what's gone on since then.
Can you feel the love from your country? We are very proud of the bronze medal that was won by the ladies.
Yeah, I think, you know, our immediate circles have definitely reached out, and we've gotten a lot of messages and emails and phone calls. I don't know if we have a full understanding of the big scope of it. I think we're starting to feel just how big this might get, and I mean, we love it. That's kind of why we wanted to be part of the Olympics and show rugby to everyone in Canada.
Well, this is a victory for a bronze medal. I wonder what your thinking was when a victory was won by having this as an event in the Olympics.
Oh, huge. I mean, 5-6 years ago when they said rugby was going to be in, we knew that it had the potential to grow the sport back home and around the world. We've seen it kind of happen with women's soccer, and we were excited for that opportunity. And to have come here and won a medal is huge. And we've kind of been saying that, you know, we won a bronze medal, but it feels pretty golden to us because we actually put in a performance that we were pretty proud of at the end.
I guess everybody did what they were supposed to do. The four best in the world ended up in the semifinals. And, you know, you lose a semifinal, and then it's not like you got to think about it for a couple of days. You got to go back out the same day and suck it up and go win a medal. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, losing that semifinal to Australia was it was pretty gut-wrenching for a lot of us. We obviously wanted to be in that gold medal final, but we didn't play very good rugby in that game. So we kind of went back in the changing room. We gave ourselves a little bit of time to be upset about it, and then we knew we had to turn it around because we had another warm-up starting in about 90 minutes.
Talking with Ghislaine Landry, one of the Canada Sevens that won the rugby bronze. And they did it against a team that handled them pretty well in the preliminary. So what was the thinking going up against England after they beat you the first go-round?
Yeah, we faced England many times over the series this year and the last couple of years. And we know that if we don't show up, which is what happened in the pool round, they can punish us. And that's exactly what happened. You know, we didn't play our game plan. We fell off a lot of tackles and made some pretty big defensive errors. But we were pretty confident that if we got back to our game and played the rugby that we could beat them, because we've done it so many times before. So just about getting back to the basics and playing our rugby, and we're pretty confident when we do that.
What do you think about when you take out that medal and have a look at it?
It's pretty special. I mean, to have something to bring home and, you know, hang on the wall and look at it, it's kind of a representation of the last 5 years that this program has done, and, you know, individually all the time and the effort that we've put into this dream. I mean, had we not finished with a medal, we would have had to find a way to be okay with that, but it feels pretty good to have a medal around our neck than to have it with us now.
Canadian medal winners, Ghislaine Landry. I wonder, as you look around and, you know, how long this group has been together, how much time you spend together as a group, and how you look around after winning a medal and look into the faces of all those people you spend so much time with.
Yeah, you know, we're a program of 26 athletes and about 12 staff overall. And we spend 6 days a week, every week together training, you know, full 8-9 hour days together. So that's a lot of time, and those girls become your family and those staff as well. You know, we spent more time with them than we have our own families and partners. And to come to an event like this and to stand on the podium with those girls and hold their hands and, you know, raise their arms in the sky, it was special. And that's the kind of moment you want to share with people that you spent that much time with and you've worked so hard together with.
How difficult is it from a financial standpoint to be able to continue along and realize a dream when you know that you got bills to pay?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a big burden, but it's just part of the choices that you make when you're an amateur athlete in Canada. You know, Sport Canada provides funding, and when we're centralized, a lot of our nutrition and, you know, physios all paid for, but you're not making a lot of money. And I think if we're going to start to see a shift as other countries are able to put more money into that. So I know Rugby Canada is working at kind of supplementing that and finding a way, but it's part of it. You know, real life it gets expensive. And as an amateur athlete, you've got to find a way to do that. And, you know, you're not living the life of a professional athlete, but you're putting in the time and effort of one.
With Ghislaine Landry, bronze medal winner at the Olympics in the rugby sevens. How did Rio turn out to be in comparison to what you thought you were heading towards?
Oh, it's been fantastic. You know, I'm actually sitting downtown in LeBlanc right now, having breakfast with my family, and it's a beautiful city. We were here last summer. We did all the tourist sites, and we spent time downtown, and it's a great city. You know, there's a lot of negative press that was happening before and might still be, but the people are great. The city's great. We were very well taken care of in the village, and I'm feeling pretty safe sitting outside right now.
How are you dealing with the sudden notoriety? I mean, this is a sport that, you know, maybe not a lot of people knew about, certainly not a lot about the players on the team, and now people know you.
It's pretty cool. I mean, we've always said that if rugby could get some spotlight, people would fall in love with it. I mean, we fell in love with it years ago. I've never met anybody that has watched a rugby sevens game and said that they weren't impressed or they didn't enjoy it or it wasn't exciting. It's such a great sport, and, you know, I obviously think that these girls are pretty great people and athletes. So to have the recognition is kind of a bonus. To get people excited about rugby in Canada is definitely a big bonus as well.
So what happens now? What happens with Canada's rugby team between now and 4 years from now?
A little bit of rest now, you know, spend some time with friends and family and just come down from what's been such a high. And then the program will continue and, you know, we'll get back to training and start the next quad, and players will come in and we'll get some fresh players, and hopefully we can, you know, make some strides to keep up with the Australias and New Zealands, who are, you know, I mean, a gold medal for Australia is going to boost the sevens program there. So we've got to keep up with that. And, you know, the World Series happens every year, so that's a good marker. You know, every year you kind of know where you're standing compared to the other countries.
Any athlete that you've walked past in the last few days that you went, whoa, I'm impressed?
The volleyball players are absolutely massive. You know, when we're around rugby players, I'm a smaller athlete, but I don't actually feel that small around the rugby players. But when you're standing beside the volleyball players in the meal hall, I come up to their waist almost. So that's impressive. Usain Bolt was in the meal hall the other day, and he was getting swarmed by athletes and staff members. So that was pretty cool as well.
How long you stick it around, and how many teammates are staying to enjoy perhaps other events and other Canadian potential medal winners?
Yeah, actually, all 11 of the 12 are going to stay around till the closing ceremonies, check out some of the other sports, go to Canada House and have a celebration and just enjoy what the Olympics are all about and the overall experience, because obviously the first week we were pretty focused on getting the job done.
Ghislaine Landry, congratulations. Canada is proud. Enjoy your medal and enjoy the rest of your time. All right, thanks.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Ghislaine Landry, bronze medal winner with the Canada Rugby Sevens. Very exciting sport, and we'll see where they go in the next 4 years and how much attention we pay to them in between the Olympics, and that's why I think she was laughing when I asked her, where do you go in the next 4 years? Montreal Alouettes underway against Edmonton, and the Edmonton football team just ran it down the Alouettes' throat until the one-yard line. Then they fumbled it and went off an owl, and the Alouettes got the ball on their own one-yard line. No worse for wear. No points. And so that's the deal there. Just getting underway in the pool. It's the, I believe, the 200-meter breaststroke. Yep. And Canada with an opportunity in this one. The Canadian taking part is Kiara Smith. In an hour from now, it will be the freestyle with Penny Oleksiak. All right, we talked about the women at the Olympics, but we did that on the Sportsnet panel earlier today with Elias Makos as the host, and you'll hear some of that conversation coming up.
Elliot Price, welcome to Sportsnet tonight.
Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Get a shit, tell everything.
Smoke meat and fries.
That's good stuff.
Elliot Price on weeknights.
Hi, Ben.
What do you do for an encore? Fall asleep?
Hell yeah.
Good time was had by all. The conversation on the panel today, Sportsnet Central. And if you missed it, it was on at 6:30. You can catch it tomorrow night at 11 and twice more on the weekend with the host with the most, Elias Makos, along with my good friends, Sean Farrell, Jeremy Filosa, and Derek Fage. And here's part of today's conversation.
Well, the Rio Games in full swing, and we've got to give a lot of credit to the Canadian women who are really bringing home the hardware. What can we attribute the success of Canada's women at these Olympics?
Our women are better than our men.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, it's that simple, really. What I'm really excited about is you look at the ages of these girls that are winning in the pool right now. Swimming, women swimming here in this country, we have a bright future at the Olympics. Well,
listen,
no doubt.
There's one thing. Sports in general, throughout the world, has been reserved a lot of times to men. A lot of sports and governments invest money in men's sports. And in a lot of other countries, women's sports, they're just not paying attention. They're not putting the money into it.
I think you hit it there, because here in Canada, we're investing equitably on both sides, and that gives us an edge when you've got to go on the international stage.
You still have to have the talent in the certain sports, and it's cyclical, and right now the women are better than the men, and we knew this coming into the Olympics, and the basketball team and the soccer team haven't even finished with their medals yet.
And the rugby sevens team.
They accomplished. Just fantastic. I love watching it. Unbelievable. Like the power and strength of those. I was really worried about them going up against Great Britain after watching the New Zealand Great Britain game.
The same day.
And that I found unusual too. Like playing that many games in one day, a sport like that, I don't know. They should change that.
So short. I want to point out for our audience at home, I'm fully aware this is a panel of five men talking about women. We also have to point out that Andy Bennett, Stephanie Miles are contributors on this panel. They're both covering the Olympics right now, which is why they're not here. But let's point out something that happened on the CBC this week. Adam Creek, who's won a medal before for Canada, speaking with Ron McLean about Jeannie Bouchard, and this comment really turning a lot of heads. Have a look at it.
Her social media, she's posting pictures of herself, she's holding up the toothpaste, and she's trying out different hairstyles, and maybe she wants something different than to be a competitor. And, you know, that's okay. You know, for me as a sports fan, I'm not interested in watching that, but there are people out there who want to see someone, you know, pursuing beauty and fashion and this sort of thing.
This comment gets even more ridiculous when you hear some backstory, because Elliot, you had Stephanie on your show this week, and she spoke to you about a discussion she had with Adam Creek.
She sat beside him like an hour or two before this commentary, and this conversation came up, and she said, I try to diffuse. I try to explain to him that Jeannie on Twitter, that picture, or on Instagram, that picture took her 30 seconds. She puts in 4 to 6 hours of training every single day, and you're calling her out for the 30 seconds in which she took a picture, and he still went on. And look, there's no, if someone's going to say something, be it way, way wrong, they're still going to say it, and he's way out of line.
What I learned from it is that I've got to look up the toothpaste photo, because I missed that one, and now, you know, he's drawn my attention to it. He is there as a reporter. This is an Olympic gold medalist. He is an accomplished rower, but he is there as a reporter. Now, he's, boy, talk about a soapbox. You know, being able to comment on something like that. But my Lord, listen, what a terrible, terrible way to present yourself.
Who did she lose to? She lost to a significant better player.
I don't think that's what it was about. But listen, the reality is some people become athletes, actors. They work in journalism because they want to be seen. They want to get publicity. They want to get fame. And for some people, being in the middle, in the mix, and winning some, losing some, but just being there and being famous is good enough. And what are you going to tell people? I'm not saying this is her case, but it's everybody's right to do whatever you want, right? And it could be. I don't see in this girl in press conferences, I'm angry that I lost. I want to win. I want to kick everybody's butt.
I don't question her competitiveness. The way that he presented himself was very, very male chauvinistic. The way he put it out there about caricaturing
her. She is branding herself, and it's one of the reasons why PK is not here anymore either, because they didn't like the fact that he branded himself, and a lot of people out there don't like the fact that she's branding herself. She's got a 10-year career in tennis, and after that's over, you know what? She's setting herself up for more success.
But it's more than just the branding. I mean, what you just said about her is why PK is not here. They wanted him to be angry after losses. They want are you telling me that PK wasn't on the ice giving his all trying to win hockey games because at the end of the game he wasn't mad about in the public eye?
For having covered PK, I can tell you one thing: he hated to lose. So I never got a sense that he didn't. You know,
look
he was
at how
okay.
frustrated she was at the Rogers Cup in Montreal. She was pissed. She smashed her racket.
And she gets flack for it when she's been too fierce to her competitors.
I'm all right with that.
She gets flack for that too. So she can't win.
I know.
If every show should have a Tragically Hip song, then every show should have a Warren Zevon song as well. I'm sorry. Ain't that pretty at all? It's a crazy, crazy world we live in. What can I tell you? Anyways, go get him, Genie. One of these days you're going to prove everybody wrong and you're going to win yourself a major championship. Right now, got to hope that Graham Dillette is the guy that wins himself the big one. And he has a great opportunity starting off just three shots off the pace in second place at the Olympic Golf Championship, where Canada is the defending champion.
That's right.
Of course, they haven't had that event in over 100 years, but the last time they did, Canada was the winner.
Is this the longest reigning, like, as a country holding a medal? We must be the longest reigning champions, Olympic champions of any sport.
Well, no, I don't think so.
Does that count?
There's probably an event held when the men were naked in Greece in the early,
Fair enough. Modern Olympics. There you go. Sorry, I should have qualified.
Those events, and no one has actually,
they don't do
naked men wrestling. They just, you can't get competitors. No. I don't know what it is. At least, I don't know. How did we get here? Still to come. Get ready. Get the Kleenex out, because there's a whole lot of tears coming. It's a goodbye for Prince Fielder. We'll hear from the rotund one and many of his teammates yesterday with a press conference in Texas. That's coming up next.
Elliot Price.
Crazy fool.
Elliot Price.
We're doomed.
Elliot Price.
Illogical.
Elliot Price.
Weeknights at 8.
Right, it was goodbye for Prince Fielder, and this happened very quickly. I mean, one day he's playing, next day there's some sort of injury, and a couple of weeks after that, it's over. And Prince Fielder, with neck injuries, back injuries, and surgery still to come, in a neck brace, and talking to media, family, friends, teammates, and having a hard time doing it.
I'm just, you know, called this today. The doctors told me since, you know, two spinal fusions, you know, I gotta, you know, can't play Major League Baseball anymore. So I just want to, thank my teammates. You know, all the coaching staff. I'm really miss being around those guys. Cause you know, a lot of fun, and I just been in the big league clubhouse since I was their age. So just you know, to not be able to play is gonna be tough. So, you know, like I said, I'm just, Happy I got to enjoy my career so far and play with these guys. And, you know, they're awesome, you know, especially, you know, Bees. You know, Bees helped me out a lot this year, you know, especially, you know, struggling a little bit. So, you know, seeing him come to the field every day with a good attitude really helped me out, you know, so, because what he's going through. So having him around really helped me out a lot. Especially, you know, MASH, you know, those two guys, you know, us, you know, I was DH, so, you know, that was my guy sitting next to me most of the time on defense. So I got to talk to him a lot too, man. And, you know, those two guys really, you know, I talk to them a lot, you know, just because, you know, I talk to them a lot, as well as the rest of my teammates, because you guys really helped me out a lot, especially this year. And I want to thank, you know, my wife. She's really helped me a lot as well, man, especially, like I said, this year was, you know, some struggle this year, and, you know, and then to hear this news, for her to stay positive and always, you know, no matter what, she would always stay positive. She would never, she wouldn't let me, you know, get down on myself at the house. She wouldn't let me mope. She wouldn't let me, she would never let me, she would never let me feel less, feel any less about myself than I should. You know, she always, like I said, she always made me feel like the way I was supposed to. You know, take my boys, you know, for always. No matter what, you know, I was the best to them, so that always made me feel real good. I want to thank you guys for that, you know, to my two homies. So, thank, you know, Scott, thank him a lot, you know. Been there since I was, you know, 1920, you know, something like that, right? So, yeah, you know. And he's good at getting contracts, that helps too. So, shoot. Thought I was just gonna cry in the car. But, I think that's all I got. You know, I'm on Rangers now, so I forgot about the teams I played with. I want to also thank Detroit. You got a tissue? Detroit. Thank Detroit and especially Milwaukee. You know, that's where I started out. You know, that's where everything, you know, that's what got me here. So without those two teams and cities, you know, I wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't been able to have this time, man. It's, you know, even though I know I struggled personally this year, this is actually the best the best, the most fun I've ever had, and the best I ever felt mentally about baseball. You know, it's, that's the only thing that really hurts about not being able to play is that my brain was really good with my body now. You know, my body just gave out before.
There you go. That was tough to watch, by the way, is two boys sitting up there with him, one of them in tears. And if you know the history of Prince Fielder and the relationship with his dad, quite an emotional time to watch. Also an opportunity to listen to some of his current teammates who haven't been his teammates for that long. Ian Desmond, Elvis Andrus, Carlos Beltran, Mitch Moreland. Have a listen.
To walk away from that early is something that I don't ever want to imagine. But, you know, I certainly respect everything that Prince has ever done in his career. You know, we come from a similar area. We're both from Florida. So, you know, I've heard about the legend of Prince Fielder since I was, you know, 12 years old. You know, he was playing against kids that I grew up with. And everyone always talked about how awesome he was. And then I got to watch him at the major league level and you know, going through the same process that he's going through. And he was so much, his game was so much farther advanced than mine, so just the respect that I had for him, you know, was unbelievable. And then coming over here and getting to see how great of a dad he was and how awesome of a teammate he was just made me kind of adore him even more. And, you know, to see him emotional like that, to see his boys up there crying. You know, I've got three kids of my own, and, you know, never, you know, like, for me, like, you know, I didn't go to college, so, like, you know, one of the only gifts I have is to give my kids the game of baseball and to be able to come to the field every day and, you know, kind of enjoy this ride. And for them to, you know, kind of be cut short of that, you know, is unfortunate. But, you know, he's just an awesome guy, awesome dad. He's raised two unbelievable kids. And, you know, I think that's, you know, it sounded like what he's most proud of. So, you know, hopefully, you know, this provides him some peace and he can go home and, you know, just get his body right and get his mind right and enjoy the heck out of those kids.
I think the kids actually love baseball more than Prince, but it was a sad moment. We barely see him like that. And, you know, for any teammate, you know, you don't want that to happen. You don't want him to, nobody to retire that way. But, like I always say, you know, health and family first. And, you know, we're going to miss him a lot for sure.
It's tough, man. It's tough what he's going through. There's no doubt that, you know, the guy wants to play and, you know, he wants to be back in the game. But unfortunately, you know, that's what happened when you play this game of baseball. Injuries could happen and, you know, could make your career short. So, you know, he's a great guy. Fielder is a great guy. And, you know, it's just sad to see that.
Just the biggest thing is I want him to know and that everybody in here is behind him. I'm behind him. And I'm knowing he knows that. But, you know, just that's the biggest thing, kind of reinforce that to him and just let him know that we're behind him and backing him. So that interview pretty much showed it. You know, that was pretty emotional, pretty tough to watch. Just, I mean, from everybody's perspective, my wife was at home and she sent me the same thing. You know, it was tough to watch. And it's just one of those times, you know, you never want to be, you know, see it go down that way. But, I mean, what he did in his career is remarkable, you know, to say the least. So, you know, I'm proud to say that I got to be his teammate and his friend along the way and, you know, made a lifelong friend out of it as well. So that's the good parts of it.
Over here.
So Prince Fielder calling it quits. What a shame. I mean, you look at the team that Texas has this year, and you wonder, you know, when all is said and done, are we going to be thinking about Prince Fielder sometime in October when his bat is sorely needed? When it comes down to, obviously, they're flying high now. They have a big lead in the American League West, but you face awful tough pitching when it comes to October. And a bat like Prince Fielder to back up and to drive in runs and to get hits and to hit the long ball in a playoff series, not going to be there. They might be a Prince Fielder bat short of winning a World Series. You have no idea. Meanwhile, the New York Yankees have just scored a couple of runs, I believe. Thought I saw Yankees 3 and Red Sox 2. Did I not see that? Now it says Red Sox 2, Yankees 1. I'm losing my mind is what I'm doing. I'm sure I saw Yankees 2 runs.
I see 4-2 now.
All right, so they got another one. I don't know what happened here. Look, I'm looking at ESPN here. It said 3-2, and I looked away, and now I look back, and it says Red Sox 2, Yankees 1. And I'm sure I just saw the Yankees score a pair, and they did. What's the matter with you? Here, we'll update. Yes, Yankees 4. And they've done it to Brad Ziegler. Here's the guy they brought in for this express reason. Yeah. You got a 2-1 lead. You bring this guy in that you got from Arizona. He was closing out there. He was dynamite. Gave up 3 runs in the 8th inning.
I have a question for you. Yes. We just heard the Prince Fielder retirement yesterday. The other day, you played the A-Rod one. Do you think it makes a difference how a player retires? Like in this case, you know, Prince Fielder got hurt, and it sort of spiraled, in 2 weeks, he's out of the game. You know, with someone like A-Rod, it was over the last couple of years, the skills have slowly declined, as opposed to, say, an injury which sort of stops cold, like a career cold in its tracks, like dead in its tracks. Do you think there's a difference? Like, how does that play out for a player? Understand.
What's the question?
Well, my question is the way you retire, say an injury sort of ends it really quickly, as opposed to a player having his career decline over a year or 2 years.
As far as what?
Emotionally, how you feel about it. Like, you can see it coming.
See.
Sorry,
yeah.
You're right. So how you can see it coming versus, like, being so sudden.
I mean, you know, it's a shock.
Yeah.
A-Rod thinks he can still play, though.
Right.
I mean, he didn't. I would say 3 weeks ago, he didn't see that his career was coming to a close. He had another year left on his contract and expected to play with the Yankees. And I imagine 2 months ago, Prince Fielder didn't see the end of his career coming. Everything was, you know, fine at some point. You got an injury. You've had injuries before. But, no, I mean, he played an awful lot of games.
Yeah.
It's a shock to the system. I think you always think that you can play.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many guys go past the point that they should go. You know, it's an amazing player that realizes that the time is now. Anyways, Yankees with a 3-run eighth inning so far, and that would push the Red Sox if it holds up, and the Yankees certainly going to Betances any moment, and that would leave Toronto with a half-game lead on the Baltimore Orioles, because the Blue Jays had today off, and the Orioles won their game 9-6 against Oakland. And with the Red Sox, if they were to lose, they started the day 2.5 back in the American League East, and this would push them to 3, but that game's not over yet. Yankees getting 3 in the 8th, going from 2-1 down to 4-2 up at Fenway Park. All right, one piece left, an opportunity to hear Donovan Bailey talk about Andre DeGrasse. One great Canadian sprinter to another. What does the kid have? And I got to tell you, Donovan Bailey firmly behind the next great Canadian sprinter. That's coming up. Sportsnet tonight with Elliott Price, 1280 CFMB, Montreal.
Elliott. Elliott.
Price!
Elliott. Elliott. Elliott.
Price!
Elliott. Elliott.
Sportsnet tonight with Elliott Price
and Greg Robinson.
Well, this whole place sucks. That's right, it sucks.
Right, Grant Robinson back on Monday enjoying his vacation in Florida. Freddie Uni sitting in for Grant. And thanks again to Elias Makos, who joined us a couple of times on Friday night. And, of course, last night sitting in the catbird seat. Man, oh, man, do the Montreal Alouettes look like trash tonight so far against Edmonton. It's 14-0 Edmonton, and it's hard to believe that it's actually worse than that because Edmonton took the ball down the field the first time. Alouettes have not stopped them once. Edmonton took the ball down the field the first time they had it, fumbled the ball on the one-yard line, or else they'd have five more points. And here they are on the doorstep of more points. Look like they just scored another touchdown. And I don't know. I don't know what's going to be with the Montreal Alouettes. Not only are they not winning football games because they had that one big win that looked maybe like they had started on a better track. Oh, they took 6 points off the board. So it's back to 8-0. But we'll see what happens with Edmonton here. Yeah. They disallowed that touchdown on review. There seems to be discord between the coach and the players and the general manager and the players since it's the same guy. And right. If you and again, you lose football game, you lose games in any sport, and there's always problems inside the dressing room. It happened with the Montreal Canadiens last year, and it's happening with the Alouettes right now. So Edmonton will have another go at it, second and goal, and we'll get on with the show here. One more piece we're telling you about Donovan Bailey getting behind Andre DeGrasse. We heard from Andre DeGrasse a couple of weeks ago. A lot of people were questioning the direction he was going in. He was pacing himself. He wanted to get to the point where he needed to get at the right time.
Yeah, that's what I've been working on. I know people are probably wondering how come he's not producing these fast times right now early in the season, but it's because I got a favor for the big show, so... right now, I'm just happy that I'm, you know, performing well and, you know, I'm winning races. Not at my best, so, you know, when it's time to run that, I'm going to be ready.
And Donovan Bailey, the last man to win a gold medal for Canada, and very impressive was he during his time at the Olympics. An opportunity to join the folks at... in Toronto at 590 Sportsnet to voice his opinion on Andre DeGrasse. And man, is he a booster of the young Canadian sprinter and like the rest of us, hoping for gold.
Two-time Olympic gold medalist, Mr. Donovan Bailey. Yeah. Hey, Donovan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're good. We're good. Thanks for doing this. We really appreciate getting up. Wonderful job again doing what you do with the CBC, and always a pleasure to have you on. Before we get to, you know, some nostalgia and before we get to, you know, what it's like to be an Olympic champion, the one guy who's flying under the radar, not a lot of people are talking about him yet, and I know it's a ways away, but Andre DeGrasse, have you talked to him? Do you know how he's feeling? Because he's... You know, he's got to be a favorite to finish, you know, close to, if not on the podium at some point.
Well, I spoke to him last week. I spoke to him last week in Canada. I sent him a text and also spoke to his coach a couple. I speak to his coaches quite often. So, yeah, you know what? He's not under the radar per se. I think that he's in an amazing position because it seems that maybe the big organizations aren't talking about him. And it is amazing to me that you have a kid that is that young, has not had any significant injuries this year. Last year, made it to the podium in every single major competition that he did, and that more people aren't talking about him. So I think it's a good thing. I think that he's gonna surprise a few people, and I'm certainly looking forward to it.
Yeah. Now, what kind of hope do you give him if he does make it to the final, God willing? What kind of hope do you give him? Obviously, against us, you know, the who's in the field with Usain Bolt being as dominant as he is, and you know that's a foregone conclusion. He's obviously the heavy favorite. What kind of hope do you give Andre DeGrasse if he does make it to the final?
Well, one of the things, first of all, you know, there's only two Canadians that's ever won the Olympic 100 meters. So, you know, it's not an easy thing. However, Andre is extremely prepared. And what I've said to him is give yourself a chance. So essentially make sure that, you know, you run one race at a time. And when you get to the finals, leave it all out on the track. I think that I know that for a fact that he's very prepared in training. And he's peaking right at this point. So, I expect Andre to be on the podium. I've said that all along. And, you know, but it is the 100 meters, and mistakes happen, and it's, you know, it is 9 seconds. So, but I do expect Andre to be on the podium, for sure.
Now, when you're a favorite, and you were, and you made mention of only two people winning Olympic gold medals from Canada, and I'm sure you're probably referring to yourself.
myself and 1928.
And obviously, you know, there's a lot of pressure that comes with knowing that you're, you know, a favorite to medal. And unless, of course, you're Usain Bolt, then you show up with some samba dancers and thongs, and you have a little fun, right?
Right. He looks like he's having a good time.
Yeah. But the week before, and it's sneaking up on us, the week before, and what was going through your mind? Were you just trying to stay loose? Is that the advice you'd give Andre? Would you tell him, hey, listen, don't do anything different? And what goes through your mind when you won in Atlanta the week before, a few days leading up to the actual event?
Well, the great thing about Andre is this. He's being coached by Dan Pfaff. Dan Pfaff is my coach. You know, so and Stuart McMillan is one of my best friends in the world. So the week leading to the games, you have all your work has already been done. Like every single thing that you have done, it's like studying for an exam. You know, cramming at the last minute is not going to help you any. You know, so all the work has been done for him to be ready. So this last week, it's probably a lot of therapy, definitely some block starts just to remain consistent. Maybe one last weightlifting session, but essentially, it is really just maybe going over his playlist and getting a massage and completely being at ease, sleeping properly, getting your body in a complete routine that you know that whenever you step on the track. You have maximum energy, and that's really what it is. The last week really is your work's already done. You know, so it's really a time to relax and take it easy, and also probably most importantly to avoid people and avoid the outside distractions.
Donovan, you're a guy. You're in your late 40s. You look terrific. You don't look a day over 30. If you trained hard for a month, what would you run right now in the 100 meters?
I wouldn't even try. Me?
Yeah. No, if you trained hard for a month, Donovan, hardcore, what would be your time? I'm dying to find out.
No. But listen, here's the real answer.
Yeah.
If I trained hard for a month and I went into the blocks and there's actually people in there that are competing, I would not make it down the track. Because instinctively, what would happen to me is that, one, I'll be trying to beat them. And I know that, I would probably lose a hamstring at the 30-meter mark.
By the way, DeGrasse, I just saw this like moments ago. DeGrasse, 33-1, the odds of him winning the gold medal. Usain Bolt is the prohibitive favorite at 8-15. So he's a 1-2, almost a 1-2 favorite. Next is Justin Gatlin of the United States at 13-8. So DeGrasse at 33-1. So there you go. Doesn't matter what you
33.
Want.
You know who else had 33?
Yeah, Patrick Waugh. And he's gone.
He's gone. All right. He booked out of there.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We enjoyed the show. Hope you did as well. We've got a very busy Friday show coming up for you. We thank our guests on tonight's show, Scott Lewis from Sportsnet in Toronto, helping us out with the Patrick Waugh situation. Daniel Kalis, counting them down. We got to number 20, the Philadelphia Eagles in the National Football League, one every day. He'll be back to tomorrow. We finally got to our interview with Ghislaine Landry from Canada's Rugby Sevens that won the bronze medal. We thank all the people in Toronto for helping us out at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, including letting us have a listen to their interview with Donovan Bailey. And of course, every Thursday night, a little bit of what you may have missed from the Sportsnet Central panel with the host Elias Makos. Our thanks, as usual, to Freddie Iuni and David Maione. On behalf of them, I'm Elliot Price. You can catch us on our podcast somewhere on iTunes and TuneIn, and we're everywhere. And, of course, on Sportsnet.ca. See you tomorrow night.